Well, hello and welcome back to another episode of the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast, Let's Talk About It series. Ross Flanagan here, your co-host with Jamie Glazier. And we have another very willing guest who joins us today, all the way from far north Queensland, the Atherton Tablelands. It might be our first guest from that far north in Australia. Absolute pleasure to have Alicia English with us. We'll bring you Alicia in a minute, but right now let's catch up with Jamie. Jamie, how are you up there and also in Queensland? Are you well?
Well, Roscoe, very well, thank you. It's been a busy couple of weeks, but continued, you know, great feedback from those first couple of episodes of the Let's Talk About It series. It's been a very popular one, and a lot of people are starting to put their hand up to want to come on and share their stories, and which is fantastic.
Well, the proof of that is our guest today, Alicia, who, as I said, joins us from up in Queensland there. You know, we don't know Alicia. You've never worked with Alicia before. From all accounts, and you know, we've got a bit of a message there from Alicia giving us a bit of a summary on how she got to where she's at with the golf now, which we'll talk about in a second. But you know, you don't know Alicia, I don't know Alicia, but again, someone that's out there wanting to improve her golf game, recognizes that the mental performance part of the golf game is so integral to performance, and reached out and said, I'd love to have a chat and, you know, sort of give you a summary of where I've been, but more importantly, look at some solutions and strategies for going forward. So that's what we're going to chat about today with Alicia English. Alicia, welcome to the Let's Talk About It series of the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very well, thanks. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Couple of things from me first before, you know, we've already had a chat to Jamie, but before we get on with it, how did you come across the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast, and give us a bit of a background into, you know, where you discovered us?
I guess just looking at all things golf, you know, in my spare time, looking for different podcasts, looking for anything golf related, really, just to try and give me that edge and improve my golf game. And I came across you guys and just really resonated with me and stood out, I guess. So, yeah, listened to every podcast. I was a bit late joining the podcast. I had a few to catch up on. Have listened to several of them numerous times.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And that is the beauty about, you know, what Jamie and I, but more so Jamie, continue to do. It's certainly evergreen content, as we say in the content creation world, that you can listen to it and you can find it from day one, you can find it from day 301, and it really does still have a meaning. Background for golf for you, Alicia, how long have you been playing golf? When did you get into the game?
So I get into golf as a junior, probably around, I don't know, maybe the age of 12, I'd say. Played for probably 3 or 4 years. Got, you know, reasonably well at it, then gave it up. You know, life gets in the way, you grow up, had a family, that sort of thing. And yeah, just, I guess, lost that part of my life. Fast forward, you know, 20, 25 years later, and I discovered the game of golf again and fell in love with it all over again, I guess. And it's brought me to here.
That's great, because, you know, golf's a great game for doing that. And me being a golf retailer, I've experienced that, as all golf, the whole golf industry has, is the amount of people that maybe have experienced golf as a younger person, then given it away for whatever circumstances, and then be able to come back to it. That's why I love golf, because I did the same, you know, effectively when I moved out of Cessnock, New South Wales, moved to Sydney, then moved to Melbourne, left the clubs alone pretty much. So it's a beautiful part of the game. The other part of the game that comes with us that we don't leave behind is some of the baggage, some of that expectation, or whatever you call it, you know, how we used to be and then how we are when we re-pick up those clubs. I definitely dealt with that, and I know a lot of golfers that I met and talked to in the retail environment have as well. You certainly have, Alicia. You sent us a really long and lovely message about, you know, your backstory with the game and the journey about improvement and going through that whole process and how you got back to where you are. We've read that. Jamie, you read it. You know, how did you feel when you read Alicia's message about, you know, the challenges that she's had with the game?
Yeah, look, Ross, it's a very interesting journey that Alicia's had, and I think there's going to be some listeners out there, a lot of listeners out there actually, who are going to resonate with getting to a certain point in your golf where you want to take it that next level. You know, you really sacrifice a lot of things in your life and you make golf performance something that you really strive for, put a lot of time, effort, energy into. And with that also probably a lot of pressure, expectation, and all those fun things. And ultimately you can only walk that path for so long without a return on investment, so to speak, without your game going to the levels of which you want to, before you sort of have to sit back and go, okay, let's reassess and let's maybe, you know, take another pathway. And I think that's what Alicia has sort of gone through. So I think Alicia, to just describe a little bit about that journey, you know, when you got to a certain point in your golf where you wanted to turn the volume up, you wanted to really make some sacrifices and strive for, you know, that not only the next level, maybe the next two or three or four levels in your game. So let's just talk through that for us for a little bit.
Yeah, so when I first decided to start playing golf again, I more socially, I guess, I would just play on a Sunday morning in the local comp. Didn't really, no expectations, no pressure, just go out, have a bit of fun, something for me, I guess. You know, I have three kids, I work full time, so I guess that was something for me. I guess then I started playing with a friend during the week. So, you know, two times a week, all of a sudden handicap starts dropping. I guess I found my junior days a bit and, you know, didn't lose that talent completely. So the more you play, that handicap started to drop and I sort of went, hey, you know, I could actually be okay at this and, you know, play a bit more competitively. So I joined a club that had a bit more female competition. Handicap dropped quite significantly, quite quickly.
What numbers are we talking there handicap-wise?
So I think when I originally started socially, I probably started about 22, dropped to 16 pretty quickly, switched clubs to, you know, an 18-hole course with more competition and dropped down to 8. So, you know, felt pretty good about that.
What was that time frame like from, say, 22 to 8?
Oh, maybe a year or two.
So, yeah, not long at all.
And then I say the big difference, like dropping from 16 to 8 would have been, you know, less than a year, like really got back into it.
Okay. That's obviously a fabulous achievement to drop your handicap by that much. As you said, re-tapped into some of the junior talent that you had just by playing that a little bit more often. And so talk to us a little bit about when you got down to 8, you know, what triggered the shift in mindset to take it more seriously, to really put, you know, a lot more time, effort and energy into the game? And talk us, you know, about that stage.
I think it's, you know, like I said, having a family and working full time and just having that thing for myself and then realizing that I was actually quite good at it. And, you know, I guess that's a big thing, to find something for you that you're good at and it makes you feel good. So, yeah, I think, though, when I got to that low handicap and I thought, you know, I could actually be quite good at this, just that obsession kicked in. So I picked up everything I could, you know, podcasts, other, you know, mental strategies, but then saw coaches, changed clubs, bought every swing aid that you could think of. Anything I could, you know, did an exercise program that was specifically for golf. Like everything had to be helping my golf game. And I think it kind of went the other way.
Right. So so let's talk about the, I suppose, the aftermath. I mean, the word obsession there, I think as golfers, we all know how easily it is to be obsessed with the game. It really truly is one of those games that we can find ourselves. I giggled then because I remember Aaron Baddeley many, many years ago when I went to visit him in Scottsdale after he'd got married and started to have some kids. He was telling me, his wife Rochelle was telling me a story of she found him. They put a family band together of, you know, a certain time of the day, no golf, just no golf. You're just with the family. She found him in the wardrobe one day, putting, just hiding himself in the wardrobe after hours, you know, where he wasn't allowed to practice his putting. So it was like, just, it's one of those games that we can just become super obsessed about. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about the aftermath. What happened after the obsession kicked in? For one, you know, performance, but also just overall enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, well, I can relate to the putting story because I've got a putting mat in the bedroom, to much to the disgust of my husband, I think. The aftermath, I think, you know, with that obsession, I got to a point where maybe I stopped playing for myself and the enjoyment. Those expectations, I guess, that you talk about, and I just tried so hard. And when you don't get those outcomes, when you're putting in so much effort, it's really disappointing and quite heartbreaking. And I think when other people see you put in that effort too, they also expect, you know, better things from you. So when your golf starts to decline, I feel like maybe I was letting other people down as well, not just myself. You know, I'd play with people who'd play with me when I first started and they'd be like, what happened to your swing? Like, you never used to swing like that. And it's quite, I don't know, demoralizing. Like,
yeah,
I just felt embarrassed, I get, a little bit mortified and didn't want to play anymore for that, for myself, yeah.
And how long did it take for that transition, you know, to sort of take over once you got into that obsession and that, I'll say, information overload, for want of a better term, where, you know, you really went all out with trying to improve every element of your game, physically, technically, mentally. What did that look like?
I reckon it was probably a period of maybe 2 years, just a slow decline, not, you know, an instant kind of I was just crap all of a sudden. Just a slow decline.
I suppose the interesting thing you said earlier was that, you know, you stopped playing for yourself, and that sort of sense of burden or expectation of other people, even if it was, you know, as you say, the people that you played with at the club that were seeing you put so much time, effort and energy in, and probably were, you know, in your corner as well. They wanted you to do well because they could see the sacrifices you were making. So in that sort of 2 year period, then what happened after that? Where are you at now? And how long ago was that 2 year period where that, you know, ultimately that sort of decline, you know, came and you chose a different path?
It's still very recent. So over the Christmas break, I took a couple of months off.
Yeah.
You know, busy time in life. I had a son that just graduated year 12 and moved out of home. So lots of stuff happening. So probably in the last couple of weeks, I'd say, I've gotten back into it quite differently this time. You know, I've just peeled it all back, gone back to basics, practice what I want to practice, you know, don't have a set time. And I guess before I was ticking boxes, like, you know, if I practice in the morning and then if I practice during my lunch break and then I get home and I do a bit of practice, you know, I'll be great and it'll all be okay. So I think I've sort of moving away from that mindset, lowering those expectations a bit, trying to enjoy the game again.
Yeah.
And not, like, I know you've talked a lot about golf being your identity. So I'm trying to separate that golf is not my identity. I can have other interests. You know, I've taken up running again and Pilates, and it doesn't have to be golf related to improve my game. This stuff is still going to help me.
Yeah.
So just trying to take away that obsession.
Yeah.
And find the enjoyment again.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's I think the fun thing here is it's actually pretty fresh. You know, you sort of got to that point just before Christmas where you're like, I can't do this anymore. I need to find a different way to approach my game. And you spoke there a lot about enjoyment, but I can hear the underlying desire to get back to playing the quality of golf that you know you can play.
Well, it's not enjoyable if you're not good at it, is it?
Well, I mean, this is the thing for people like yourself who, you know, we'll call it a high-performance mindset. When you approach a game a certain way, it's very difficult to detach from that high-performance mindset. So, you know, I might talk about it as a beautiful dance between let's go and have fun and let's have some enjoyment, but I still have this intention to play well. I still want to lower my handicap and I still want to, you know, possibly get down to mid to low single figures at some point. I don't know what the handicap has now sort of gone out to over those couple of years. So where are you at with that at the moment?
So on the weekend, I am no longer officially a single figure handicap golfer. Yep. Has gone out to 10.2 or something like that.
Yep. So still, you know, still a really good golfer. So I think a couple of sort of things that are popping out at me to sort of help and discuss. First and foremost, the ticking boxes process. It's one that I find a lot of golfers do, whether it be with their routine, they're going through a pre-shot routine to tick a box, but not actually having a clear intention as to how that process is going to help performance. So I think the ticking of the boxes is, again, a very common one for people that have gone into that performance mindset and they're wanting to get as much out of each day as they can, but from a cognitive connection or an attention point of view, they're not completely connected with what they're doing. They're just there ticking a box. So, and that could also be possibly you might have been going through those couple of years of obsession, being close to burning yourself out or being burnt out well before that end of that two-year cycle. You know, when things aren't as fun or as enjoyable anymore, sometimes we can be disengaged with the process without actually knowing that we're quite disengaged. So I don't know if you look back and can tell the burnout might have kicked in at some point in that couple of year period.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too that, I think it's a bit unusual is I actually enjoy practicing. So I got to the point where I would practice, you know, at home, I've got a net, I'd go to the course and do short game practice. I actually really enjoyed that part of it. Out into the course, and I don't want to say performance anxiety, I didn't feel an anxiety, but get out to the course, just can't perform at all. And nothing like what I had been practicing. I'm like, why can't I just bring that into my game? So that was, I guess, the most frustrating, like knowing you can do it.
Yeah.
But can't perform.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's, you know, when you do practice so much and you have this expectation of transferring that quality of skills over to the competition course, you know, I talk a lot with my clients about the fact that they're two completely different environments. It's almost like, you know, you're playing football on Saturday and all week you've been playing cricket. And, you know, you expect to come to the football field performing at a high level, but that's the difference between, you know, your practice sessions and a competitive round of golf. They're just so completely different. So we try and put as much structure in there as we can that connects the two and relates. I think in this new transition, I suppose, from coming out of the obsession and bringing back the enjoyment, there's a couple of questions. First and foremost, I think really clarifying your why. You know, why do you play golf? Why is it something that you'd like to participate in and strive for? You know, really defining your reason. I don't know whether you've done that as much since you've come out.
I was going to say that was the reason I actually had a big break. I was like, yeah. I have lost my why.
Yeah.
I don't know my why anymore.
Yeah.
And until I can find that why again, I'm, you know, just going to have that break and
yeah,
and see if I can find that why again. I don't know if I have 100% down that, but I'm definitely finding some enjoyment again and just enjoying just the process of rediscovering the why.
That's great. I mean, I think that's a very powerful thing for yourself and for listeners that might be in a similar position, is that enjoy that journey of rediscovery of, you know, of just giving yourself some time, give yourself a month, 2 months, 3 months to just explore different pathways of what that why could be. I know, you know, one thing you said earlier, which was really good, you know, about working full time, you've got three kids, life outside of golf is busy and hectic. Sometimes having that me time or that thing that's just for you is very difficult to find and access when we, you know, when we get a bit older and life sort of gets in the way. So you going back to golf for you, something that you could do for yourself, that little bit of me time, I think, you know, that's always a really valuable leverage point for adults as they get a bit older and the responsibilities kick in. So so in that why, if you were to think back to what really triggered you and drove you to come back to golf after 25 sort of years away, what do you think was the really fun parts of getting back into golf?
So the reason I got back into golf was quite a story in itself. Yep. We actually had a charity golf day to raise some money. Quite a few beverages were consumed at this charity golf day, and I remember just walking up to the clubhouse and going, "Sign me up! I'm coming back to play golf." Obviously, we had far too many beers. The next morning, I went, what have I got myself into here? I've just paid a membership for the year. Decided to run with it, and then found I actually loved it again. Like, I enjoyed having that thing for myself that I was, you know, good at.
Yeah, great. Obviously a couple of beers and then, you know, committing to joining, and then you just decided I'm just gonna go with it. So I think I love the whole the journey of discovery on your why and what that why is going to be for you. I suppose when we look at the journey that you've been on, do you feel like you're still carrying any baggage with that journey of obsession and that 2 years of working and, you know, flipping your life upside down to a certain degree for the game of golf?
So for a time there, I, you know, was shooting ridiculously high scores, and come back recently, you know, haven't played a lot, haven't practiced a lot, you know, shot some reasonable lower scores that are relevant to my handicap. And when, you know, look, I've come back and done this without putting in all that work, without that obsession, and I'm a lot happier.
Okay, here's a question. I'm just going to ask it, and then you can sit with it and take it on as you wish, but either have you forgiven yourself for those few years, or do you feel there is anything you need to forgive for those few years?
I think there's probably still some stuff to forgive.
Yeah.
I am quite hard on myself.
Yeah.
I expect great things.
Yeah.
When I put effort in, I expect results and outcomes. So I feel like I'm probably quite hard on myself.
Yeah.
And maybe that forgiveness process will take some time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I say that, like, that forgiveness component in the best possible way. It's like nothing you have done has been bad, or, you know, it's just you set out on this journey with the best intentions. You dove into it with passion. You dove into it with fulfillment and this vision of just being a really, really, really good golfer. Obviously, those couple of years were really difficult on you and probably very stressful and lacked a lot of reward and fulfillment when it comes to outcomes. But a lot of times we can hold on to a little bit of resentment toward ourselves for potentially the thought of wasting a couple of years and all those sort of things. So the journey of forgiveness can be a really powerful one in just being able to let go of any of that negative attachment and also reframe it to be more of a positive experience. You know, all of that work that you put in, the discipline, the dedication, there's going to be so many different skill sets that you would have developed in that time. But although you didn't see on the scorecard, you'll be able to lean on and leverage off, you know, in future times. So there's a process of a forgiveness letter where you sit down and you actually write yourself a forgiveness letter. Okay, so it might be things like, I forgive myself for being so hard on myself. I forgive myself for lacking compassion I might have showed myself throughout that period, for talking to myself a certain way. Whatever it is that you think you may need to forgive yourself for in the way that you maybe viewed yourself in that period, spoke to yourself in that period, judged yourself in that period, I think that could be a really, really powerful process. So I'm not sure if you've ever sort of looked into a forgiveness letter or ever done anything like that before.
No, I haven't, and it'd be quite interesting. I like to think myself as kind of a tough person, so to, I guess, look deeper inside, very daunting and scary, to be honest.
Yeah, look, it is one of those processes that, you know, I'm not going to ask you to sit down in 5 minutes' time and write a forgiveness letter, but you may start to think, okay, I would really like to go through this journey and go through this process of writing the letter. It may take some time to find the right period and the right time and space. So, you know, giving yourself a good hour or so where you can not build up the courage, but just have that mental clarity of this hour I'm going to put aside to let anything that I've been suppressing when it comes to those couple of years just to come to the surface, and I'm going to be able to express myself as best as possible in that, you know, like 1 hour period. And just write all the things that sort of come to mind and come to the surface. So I think that could be a really good one. Roscoe?
Jamie, I was going to just ask Alicia, and Alicia, very brave of you to talk about all of this, and, you know, there's probably a whole lot more that you're not talking about. I'm a fellow golf obsessive, so much so that I crafted a career in it, you know, like after being in other worlds and then worked out how I could make my whole life golf. And having been in that sort of really obsessed space previously, I've never done the forgiveness letter, but it's a concept that I've thought about. I would have to include my family in that forgiveness letter, and I'm not sure if that's a valid concept, Jamie. And Alicia, to you, would you have to include your family in your forgiveness letter? How did your golf obsession impact your family life? You know, you're a mother. Are you an educator at school? Are you a teacher?
No, I do work for a university, right. Just admin based. Yeah.
But back to my point, you know, like if I had to look at my time of being that, I'd really have to include my family in this forgiveness letter. Is that something? How does that resonate concept with you? How did your obsession impact your family life?
Yeah, 100%. And I think my family is a little bit used to my obsessions. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll pick up something and jump in head first, 100%, give it my all until I guess burn out. I think golf is the first one, though, where I'm not giving up. I'm not giving in to that burnout. So definitely my family would, made some sacrifices.
And have you got an example of, you know, a time when you know, you think that you've put golf and this obsession ahead of being a parent, being a partner, being all of this other part of, you know, life that we have to do?
So this is my idea of making a sacrifice for my family. I'll still play on the weekend, but I'll get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to the course and get the earliest tee time possible, you know, so I'm home before lunch.
Hmm.
But, you know, I haven't given up the whole day, but, yeah, so definitely there's lots of times like that. Or, you know, I've gone away for team events, you know, a week at a time where, you know, I'm playing in golf events. So definitely have, yeah.
It's a really great point. Sorry, Roscoe. I think, you know, that point that you make, there's some of the deeper attachments to forgiveness that we're going to have. You know, we can certainly forgive a loss of time, a loss of money, a loss of effort when it comes to our endeavors or our passions. But sometimes the hardest and the harder things to let go of are those ones that are affecting other people. It's a super, super important point.
I think that was a big thing too, like, you know, where I sort of got to that point where I'm putting all this time and effort, I could be spending this time with my family. I could be doing other things with my family. Why am I doing this to myself? So I guess, yeah, that was definitely a big thing for me.
It sounds like, you know, you've got a very supportive family structure and environment to be able to, you know, follow this passion. And, you know, you look like, and it sounds like you've got it dialed into a system where you can, you know, maximize your time. And, you know, being a mum, being a parent is all about maximizing your time, regardless of what age children's and siblings and other family commitments are. So it sounds like you've got that dialed in. I do speak to a lot of people on a daily basis, weekly basis, that navigate that space. You know, it's like a tightrope walk because, you know, there's this balance between their golf, satiating their own desires to play golf, but, you know, the balance and the time with family, and it's a juggling act. And if you've got that juggling act sort of balancing, well done. But I'm pretty confident that there's pretty much still a time when you probably prioritise your golf needs over some of the family needs and have to, you know, walk a little bit of that tightrope. And I guess if you're conscious of it, great. If you're not conscious of it and more conscious of it now, it's only going to help, right? And, you know, I'm lucky that I've navigated those tightropes and, you know, now the balance of all of that is fairly well in place, so much so that we're moving our whole life, you know, based on my commitment to golf. So I'm pretty confident that it's all balanced. But, I sit here in the background and listen to all of this and I start to think of other things, and that was my version of other things. There you go.
Yeah, I think, as I said, Alicia, I think that forgiveness letter is a really great exercise to help you to just cut any of those strings of attachment that might be holding you back, and potentially more so in the months ahead. You know, you're just getting into it with a fresh lens again of golf and a lens of enjoyment and those sort of things. So I suppose it would be a great exercise. And the other two things that come to mind, I think that you can do, first and foremost, is the game of comparison, comparing yourself to today to when you were at your best, you know, just before you took on that journey of obsession and you're playing, you know, down to a handicap of 8 and doing it consistently, to try and not to compare who you are today as a golfer with who you were back then. So
I think I look at that with rose-coloured glasses at times too, you know, like, oh, you know, sure, wish I was like that, you know, how I was back then. But really, I wasn't that great. There was bad days. It wasn't.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's great. That's really great that you have that awareness of, hey, my perception of what life was like back then as an 8 marker, it's tainted. It's not, I don't need to go back there because it's not how I could see it. So I think that's really good. So, you know, being able to move forward and have a clear, I suppose, accept who you are as a golfer today, accept the journey that you've been on, really practicing that level of acceptance as much as possible. But the other letter that I think comes to mind, which can also help clarify your why at some point, is sitting down and writing a love letter to the game of golf, right? You sit down and you just think about all the things that you love about golf, and you put those in writing. You love the personal challenge, the you know, all the different things about the game of golf that you love, and taking you back to when you were a kid as well. What did you love about the game then? What did you love about that that day 25 years later where you took up the game, and then those corresponding, you know, first rounds of golf, and like even something as small as what you said at the very beginning of this call was, you know, you're a bit nervous. Like the way that golf can make us feel, those little butterflies, like a lot of things in our life don't activate us in that same fashion. So, you know, I think the writing a love letter to golf and going through that journey may also help to clarify what your why is for the next, you know, couple of years of playing golf.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I think those couple of exercises there, then, yeah, I love if you do at any stage over the next little bit struggle with that comparison, trying to compare yourself to back a few years ago, all I would say is to just sit down and maybe go through an identity process of identifying who you are today as a golfer, what are your patterns, what are your, you know, what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, write them all down, and then go through just owning that identity and accepting that's who I currently am, even though I'm on the path to enjoying the game more. And again, possibly knowing that when you put that time and commitment in, that you are going to sort of improve your performance as well. But, you know, things aren't going to be driven by performance and performance alone like it was a few years ago.
Yeah, excellent. I guess it just reiterates that it's not, you know, improvements, not just putting the reps in, a lot about self-awareness, intention.
Yeah.
A lot of that I'm learning, which is different.
Yeah, it's great. And I think, you know, Roscoe, that's when Alicia reached out, I was like, this episode is going to be a very, very different one to, you know, what we'll have and what we've spoken about in the past. But I know, you know, a lot of people have gone on a similar path and a similar journey with the game. So, yeah, I think it's going to resonate and help a lot of listeners out there.
Alicia, I know 100% if, you know, you approach the next phase of your golf with some of the skills and the knowledge and using these tools and exercises that Jamie's just talked about, I'm pretty confident that, you know, your golf journey this point forward will be much more enjoyable and with improvement that you want and that you're deserving of. Thanks again for choosing to share all of that with us. It means a lot to us. I know that it's not easy to share so articulate versions of your golf experience, but we do appreciate everything that you've shared with us, and hopefully that the people that are listening all around the world will get something out of your journey and be able to put it into their journey and help them be more enjoyable golfers, be better golfers, and everything else that they want to achieve out of their golfing life in the various shapes and forms that we all put out to set out to achieve every week when we go out and play this crazy game. Crazy. Yeah, it is crazy. It's a crazy game, isn't it? Like, you know, what it does to you, it's insane how we get all about this. But, you know, look at this room. It's got pictures and books and all of this other stuff here. It's crazy, but we love it, and that's why we keep doing it. Alicia, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's been really good and probably quite therapeutic to let it all out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why we labelled this new series the Let's Talk About It, because so often we suppress things that you know, that we don't like to discuss, things that are difficult and challenging. We sometimes don't like to step into it, but just creating these really good quality open discussions and you know, understanding the journey that you've been on, and I think they're fantastic. So really appreciate you coming on today, Alicia, and again, Roscoe, thank you for you know, for being the sidekick on this podcast. That you know, as you say, you are every bit all of our listeners, you know, all tied up into one. Your experience and engagement with the game of golf for a very long time, you are, for me, quintessential Mr. Golf, appreciate your insights and viewpoints as always. So thanks.
My pleasure, Jamie, and looking forward to all of the golf journey ahead. as we are with everyone who's choosing to listen, and thank you again for coming back to the Mental Mastery Let's Talk About It series. Let's get back on the charts there. You know, the rest is over. We're back into this. We've got so many more guests lined up to come on. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll soon be international when I move to Scotland, and we'll be doing this all around the world. It's going to be fun. So if you've chosen to listen, thank you very much. And share this with your friends, your family, your colleagues, anyone who you think will benefit from this great golf content from Jamie and myself. And we'll see you, I guess, next time on the Mental Mastery Golf Podcast, the Let's Talk About It series. Thanks for tuning in.